Welcome in to episode 29 of the Phoenix Suns podcast here on Bright Side of the Sun. It's a very interesting day here in Phoenix. The Phoenix Suns, a team known for making flashy, flamboyant moves, actually made a flashy, flamboyant move, at least in the eyes of most people. Big time trade made today by the Phoenix Suns. You're listening to this here on Wednesday, so this trade was made technically yesterday, but had to jump on, do an emergency podcast, or if you want to be technical, we're just doing a podcast like we're supposed to on Tuesday night. But Jim Kochenour, writing co-pilot with me as always, and Amin El Hassan from ESPN. We're going to try and three-man weave this the best we can. We're doing a three-on-one handicap match here. It's us three versus the Phoenix Suns' decisions in the NBA draft and with this recent trade of Jared Dudley. I don't know how we're going to handle this. I'm thinking 30-minute Ironman match. The one with the most quibs, puns, and best one-liners is going to win. Jim, what do you think, in general, we're going to get into our thoughts on the draft and everything, but how are you doing here tonight?
I am outstanding. It does seem to work out pretty serendipitously that the Suns like to break news on Tuesdays right before we come on the air.
That they absolutely do that. They do like to break news, whether it's coaches, general managers, etc., usually within a 48-hour window of us talking. And speaking of front offices making moves, I know, Amin, you can confirm or deny this, but basically the Phoenix Suns like to make sure that they convenience the media, right? NBA teams like to make the moves that they have convenient for media writing and reporting and getting their sleep and all that. That's taken into consideration.
I will neither confirm nor deny that report.
How are you doing here, Amin?
How's it going, fellas? I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for jumping on last minute. Now, within the last 96 hours, give or take, we've had an NBA draft. We've had a Phoenix Suns trade. We're going to leave the Phoenix Suns trade for the second half of this to kind of hook, line, and sinker you guys to listen to us the whole time. But we would never have those dark parlor tricks. Jim, let's start off with the NBA draft. The Suns come up at number 5, and this is going to be the consensus. They chose Alex Len over Nerlens Noel and Ben McLemore. What did you think about that number 5 pick of Alex Len, and then kind of bleed into that, the number 30 pick with Archie Goodwin?
The draft was pretty interesting right from the get-go through some of the lottery selections, right from when Anthony Bennett was taken number 1 overall. I think a lot of people had that as the number 1 pick, but I must have been in that small minority that just didn't see that coming and was kind of blindsided by it. And I also did not expect at all going into that draft that Len, McLemore, and Noel would all be on the board when the Suns picked 5th. Going into it, I had Len as my 4th best available. I had him just barely above McCollum. And so if you look at it from a standpoint, the Suns were drafting 5th and they got the guy like 4th best, then you'd think, well, yeah, that's a good draft then. They, drafted above their position. But that being said, Noel and McLemore were my 1 and 2. I still think that the pick is solid. I like the pick in Len, but I think he's more of a high-floor, low-ceiling player, and I think that there was more of a risk-reward situation with Noel and McLemore. I think they have more upside. That's obviously just my opinion, but it seemed like that was more of the consensus opinion between scouting agencies, those types of mediums, that those two guys were more across the board generally ranked a little bit higher. So I would have liked to have seen the Suns take one of those two guys. I think that the Suns did get the guy they liked, obviously, because they picked him with those guys on the board. But at the same time, they opened themselves up to some criticism because now looking back on it a couple of years from now, if either Noel or McLemore ends up better than Len, they'll be able to, they'll be subject to the talk of they should have picked that guy instead.
Yeah, and that's something that they opened themselves up a little bit to. Now, Amin El Hassan, ESPN insider, you got to click on the links and then pay a little bit of money to read what he's got, but it's always worth the money. When you're an NBA team, you're in the war room, as you would call it, and back in, I think it was 2008, 2009, that time frame, you guys had Steph Curry ranked as the number 1 player. You guys really wanted him. Obviously, most quote-unquote mock drafts and draft experts and whatnot had him rated a little bit lower. They had him probably in the mid lottery, which is where he went. When you look at a guy like Alex Len and you put yourself in the mindset of a front office, maybe not Ryan McDonough and the Phoenix Suns in particular, but I mean, is he a guy that you would consider taking long term in terms of an asset over a Nerlens Noel or a Ben McLemore with the way this roster is constructed?
Right. So, you know, I'll start this using Ryan McDonough's favorite term. Well, let me talk about Alex Len, and I'm not going to talk about those other guys, right? So, when you look at Len as a prospect in a vacuum, you know, he brings a lot of things that you want. Obviously, there's a seven-footer, a skilled seven-footer, there's always going to be a premium attached to that. You can play in the high post and in the low post, back to the basket. He needs to gain some strength, but you know, I'm going to disagree with you, Jim. I'm going to say he's got some upside as well. I wouldn't say he's a low ceiling player. I think he has a chance to be something fairly special, only within the prism of thinking of him as a seven footer. That there aren't that many skilled, talented seven footers walking around, and as we've seen with guys like Roy Hibbert or Brook Lopez, you know, a reasonable amount of skill can make a huge impact on the game. So my problem becomes for the Suns, this is, I think, the pitfall of the best player available kind of mantra, is when you have set yourself up to have a certain identity and a certain way of playing, and your coach talks about we up-tempo or run the ball as much as we can, and your pre-draft workouts put a heavy emphasis on running to the point where prospects are calling Phoenix kind of like the horror show when it comes to, you know, the running test. And then you draft a player who, had he been healthy during the workout, probably would have failed every single one of those tests. So there's kind of an incongruence going on between the pick and the style of play that, you know, you have, they put out themselves. You know, this wasn't prescribed from someone else. They readily told us, hey, this is how we're going to play. Particularly when you have a rookie head coach who really doesn't have, you know, hasn't been around the block, so to speak, and around a lot of different coaching staffs to have different type of offensive sets and play calls in mind, right? So now I'm going to divert from the McDonough style, and I'm going to talk about those other two guys. I thought Ben McLemore has a lot more upside and fit a need from a wing scoring standpoint, from a perimeter shooting standpoint, that Phoenix needed. I thought Noel also technically has a higher upside, but I thought his risk was so high with his medical red flags and with some of his personality red flags, if you will, that I can kind of justify, all right, I'd take Len over Noel, even with the difference in playing style taken into account.
So with that, I want to ask you a follow-up, Amin, and you again, you can confirm or deny this. NBA teams, whether it be box score watching or career watching, however you want to call it, will the Phoenix Suns be, I know the fans are going to, will the Phoenix Suns as an organization be watching Ben McLemore or Nerlens Noel, especially if they were rated on a similar tier as Alex Len, but Alex Len was rated a little bit higher?
That's a great question. I think, you know, it's kind of human nature. You're always going to wonder what, and I'll give you a great example. In 2008, with the 15th pick, we drafted Robin Lopez over JaVale McGee, Reese Sage, and Roy Hibbert, you know, the next three picks. And, you know, the reason why was, you know, we just come out of a playoff series where we were not able to guard the pick and roll, or Shaq couldn't guard the pick and roll, but we had traded for Shaq because we couldn't guard the post and rebound well. So it was kind of a pick-your-poison thing for us, and we wanted to find someone who was going to be able to be, you know, sturdy enough to guard the post and help us on the defensive glass, while at the same time active enough on the perimeter to guard the pick and roll, you know, so hard and maybe switch on the ball handlers. McGee didn't have the physical toughness to guard the post, and some would argue he still doesn't. He's a great shot blocker, a great athlete, but he's a little loopy. Spates had a negative defensive IQ, and I think we all agree that he's still there. And Hibbert was kind of
big and slow and lumbering and could not fulfill our pick-and-roll defense desires. And to this day, I would argue that he's still kind of deficient there, but he's in a good situation where the defense is designed to, you know, de-emphasize him doing that. But you can't help but watch those three guys go through their career and wonder, oh, man, what if we had drafted JaVale McGee? Would his career turn out differently? What if we drafted Hibbert? Would his career turn out differently? Spates, I think, is the only one I can say for sure that he'd be who he is today. Probably a better offensive player, but defensively, he'd still probably be a drag. So in the case of Len, McLemore, and Noel, I think it's inevitable. You're always going to keep track, regardless of whether you admit it or not.
Yeah, and that's the tough situation. I mean, I've said numerous times that Ben McLemore was one of only two guys that I think had star potential in this draft, and Nerlens Noel is a guy who, you know, if he reaches his peak, he could potentially be a star, but more than likely he's going to ease his way into more of a Theo Ratliff-y, you know, Marcus Camby, more of a defensive specialist role where he can definitely dictate the pace of the game and be, you know, a fringe defensive player of the year every year, fringe all-star. He could be that type of a player, but, you know, with his injuries, with the fact that he didn't come down to Phoenix, with the entourage issues and the off-the-court character stuff, I think most of that had to do with the entourage, not with Nerlens Noel in general. He seems like a pretty nice kid, all things considered, from the times I've met him. Now, you switch over, you're drafting 24 picks later, and I had, I'm going to pat myself on the back a little bit, I had Archie Goodwin going to Phoenix, whether, granted, it was one pick up, but had him going to Phoenix for about a month since he was in town and they did the workout. And I talked to enough reliable people within the organization that said that Archie absolutely blew them away and was arguably the best guard they've worked out in the entire process. So him coming to Phoenix wasn't a shock, but Jim, I'm going to pass the torch over to you. I think you're over there hiding in the corner there in the dark in the shadows again. What was your overall take on Archie Goodwin? I know he's not going to be expected to make an impact, probably the third or the fourth guard on opening night, but what was your take on them going with him versus maybe some of the other wings that were available on the draft board?
Yeah, I like to skulk around there surreptitiously. The Goodwin pick, I didn't have any problem with that. I don't think that there's really such a thing as a safe pick when you get down that far in the draft, because the expectation is that you're not likely to find a guy that's going to stick as a long-term NBA player. The odds, the percentages say that that's just not going to happen. You don't have a great percentage chance of finding a legitimate NBA talent that low. So going with an 18-year-old player that has a lot of athleticism and some of the tools to where he can project well as a young prospect, I think that's a good way to go. I think that both you and I had kind of discussed it, that Tony Mitchell would have been good dropping to that spot, and he actually dropped to 37. He is another similar type of player that had a lot of the great physical measurables and had went through a, you know, less than productive season than you would have liked out of him. And so that would have been probably my favorite pick at that spot, but I think the Goodwin pick is solid at that point. Back to the top of the draft real quick, we're talking about the best player available, and McDonough had Len, he said, number one overall. But you look at it from that way on everybody's board. The other teams passed on Noel and McLemore, too. They also passed on Len. So if McDonough had Len number one, well, there's at least four other teams that didn't have a number one on their board. So past that point, getting the player you want necessarily isn't always the best thing, because of all the same chance, I think that McLemore and Noel might very well turn out to be better than Len. I'd say there's also very, very good chance that Len turns out better than at least one of the four players picked above him as well.
Yeah, there's always room for that. And from a perspective of looking at him as a scout, he's 18 years old. He hasn't played a ton. You know, he had his games at Kentucky, and, you know, he was Mr. Basketball in Arkansas and then, you know, just trashed for going to Kentucky. But when you watch Archie Goodwin, because I'm sure you watch plenty of Kentucky and you've seen enough tape on him with doing a lot of the pre-draft stuff for ESPN, when you look at him, I mean, what do you see when you see Archie Goodwin other than a fresh-faced, like, legitimately 18-year-old looking kid?
You know, it's tough to contest his age. You know, it's very rare to have guys who haven't turned 19 by draft day. The rule is obviously you have to be 19 within the calendar year. So you're kind of getting a jump with a kid like Goodwin. The feel isn't quite there, I think. I think he's a guy whose athletic tools and gifts kind of surpass his understanding of the game. And when you talk about the point guard position, you know, that's imperative. You have to have good feel. You have to have, you know, a sense of timing, a sense of tempo, a sense of who's getting shots, who needs to get more shots, who hasn't gotten a shot in a while. And those kind of next level thought processes of the point guard position, I don't know if Archie Goodwin has that yet. Now, again, he's 18 years old. I mean, in some states, he might still be in high school. So it's a little early to write him off in any sense of that way. But when you talk about risk-reward, the risk of, you know, 29th overall pick versus the reward where you have this big, athletic guard who could turn out to be something incredible, I mean, I thought that was a great pick. That was great. Great scouting and incredible ability to find value at the end of the track.
Yeah, and I think McDonough said it a few times, you don't necessarily find, you know, starters or high-end quality rotation players at the end of the draft on a historical basis, but, you know, for a guy like McDonough, who everybody knows crosses all his T's and dots all his I's, the guy does his homework. Archie Goodwin's a guy that I saw two summers ago and watched him play live and came into it thinking, it's just going to be some raw kid who's really athletic and just like any other high school kid. And he went out there and was one of the best players all week in practice and athletically, physically, like you mentioned, that the gifts, the tools, they're all there for him. He's got to get his brain wrapped around it, and that's what coaching staffs and player development is for. So if he comes in and he's the third or fourth guard off the bench and he gets to learn a little bit from Goran Dragic, from Jeff Hornacek, from, you know, PJ Tucker and these guys, like learning the defensive intangibles, the ways to score to make the game easier, the way to maybe be a point guard when you're a little bit bigger like Goran is. I mean, he's got a lot of resources at his fingertips, which I think is great for him in terms of being able to develop and become a better player and kind of hone those skills. Because I think at 18 years old, I don't think anyone's going to argue he has just as much upside as probably anybody in this entire draft, but the risk-reward is there more than it is for maybe a Kentavious Caldwell-Pope or a Ben McLemore, where those guys aren't as much of a risk factor, and that's why they're taken a little bit higher. So I think overall it sounds like everybody was – picks may have been a little different, but it sounds like everybody's on board with what McDonough and the Phoenix Suns did in terms of the draft. And, you know, if we're giving out grades, I would say they rated up pretty high, but I'm not a big fan of – giving out grades for something that we don't know what it's really going to look like for 2 to 3 years. Now, one thing we are going to know is going to look like is next year the Phoenix Suns are going to look a little bit different. There's going to be less Dudley for three signs. There's going to be no more Dunk-O-Meter unless they give Brittany Griner one. There's going to be a lot of different things. You know, maybe no JMZ unless it's, you know, from the visitors' locker room. We're going to be missing a lot with Jared Dudley, a guy who was, for all intents and purposes, the leader, the character, the heart, the identity of this Phoenix Suns team the past year. Losing Jared Dudley is huge, but also netting back what most people would consider the best asset in the past year to 2 years in the NBA has got to be, you know, the upside to that. Losing Jared Dudley is one thing, but getting a guy like Eric Bledsoe who could end up being a starter or a guy who could end up being, you know, a piece that's flipped for something down the road. So I think that they did a great job not giving up too much, but also getting back what I, in my opinion, a big return. When you first see this trade, Jim, word association, first word that pops in your head, and what are your thoughts now that you've been able to digest on it for a few hours?
My first one isn't necessarily a word, but what I heard kind of discussed makes sense that he really fits the mold of the guys McDonough likes. He likes the athletic, defensive-oriented, offensively undeveloped types of players. He likes the Rondos, the Bradleys, the Goodwins, and the Bledsoes. Those are McDonough's types of guards.
And when you look at Eric Bledsoe, I mean, are we overselling this asset? They're overselling him as an asset. Saying that kind of undermines his value. He's definitely a very good basketball player. But in terms of being an asset, what is your thought on Eric Bledsoe?
Well, you know, it's never as simple as a one-word answer, right? So, Bledsoe, you know, again, in a vacuum, nice player, nice prospect. I think you mentioned it. He's been one of the hottest trade prospects out there in the market the last year and a half because everyone knew the Clippers were not going to be able to keep him. So in the sense that all you gave up was Jared Dudley in the second round pick, I thought that was incredible value in acquiring this valuable asset. But then when you start to look at him as a player, you start to wonder things. So first of all, he's due for an extension. He'll be eligible all the way up until October 31st for his rookie scale extension. If he doesn't extend, then he goes to the restricted free agency next year. Is he a building block for the future for the Suns? If so, do you risk waiting until free agency next year and possibly losing him, you know, to a massive offer sheet? The other thing is when I look at what, so I think Jim nailed it. You know, I think of someone who is, you know, a great athlete and a great defensive player, but offensively leaves something to be desired, particularly if you're going to call him a point guard. So, you know, you look at him and you say, am I going to play him and Goran at the same time? And then who's going to have to guard shooting guards night in and night out? Or am I saying this is my guy for the future and now I can dangle Goran Dragic in a trade for something better? But the third thing I think about when we talk about the Bledsoe trade is, again, going back to the dissonance between we want to run, we want to be up-tempo, and then, oh, yeah, we use a top-five pick on a center. On a center, not, I don't want to call him slow and lumbering, but he's no speed demon. He's no Joakim Noah sprinting down the court. So, you know, by adding Bledsoe, it's kind of like you're tipping the scales back towards the original sentiment of up-tempo and pushing the ball. So, you're asking yourself, these are my two building blocks, right? The guy I just acquired and the guy I drafted with a top-five pick. These are two building blocks that couldn't be any more different in terms of style of play. Who is going to dictate how the rest of the team is shaped from here on out?
Yeah, that's very true. And that's why I think it's very, very important to consider that this, and disagree with me if you want, Jim, I want you to kind of react to this. This is kind of an audition year. For, I think, both for Goran Dragic and for Eric Bledsoe. I think in one regard, you know, Goran Dragic is going to be tested in year two to see whether or not he's the guy that can handle the mantle as the starting point guard going forward. And I think with Eric Bledsoe, he's going to be tested in the regard of, is he worth flipping for maybe a 2014 pick or another asset? Or is he a guy that is going to surpass what Goran Dragic can do, which was 7 assists a game last year and by no stretch of the imagination, the best player on the Phoenix Suns roster last year. Is that out of bounds, saying that this is basically an audition for these two guys and this next season, what they do on the court's really going to determine what the Suns do for their future at the point guard position and with each of these players?
I think that there's still a very good likelihood that there's going to be more trade activity for the Suns this summer. I am of the opinion that McDonough understands the value of a couple of the players on his roster, just like he did with Dudley, and that Gortat and Scola will at least be moved, that he would rather have some kind of return on those, especially if he can get a good young prospect and or draft pick like he just managed to get with Eric Bledsoe. And he's wanting to bring in his guys. This is going to be his team now. And so I don't see a reason why he would want to hang on to old assets on the team that don't really fit the mold of a rebuilding team if he can flip those into his guys moving forward. So, like I said, he's got a penchant for that style of guard. And so I think that he definitely is going to have that as an audition in that aspect. It'll be interesting if they are playing together, Goran and Bledsoe, because they still don't have a ton of outside shooting with the guards there. Both are really turnover prone. So just between the two of those guys, you'd be looking at 6 turnovers plus a game, not including anybody else on the team. So you have some difficulties there. Goran is obviously a much better passer than Bledsoe. So you got some stuff there, but I just think that there's still going to be a lot of tumult, a lot of changeover on this roster besides this. And so it's hard to kind of look at this move individually when you expect more moves to come along, and then you have to look at them as a whole, as a package, kind of like Amin was doing, where he's saying, well, does the center make sense with the guard you just acquired in terms of your style of play? I'm waiting for a couple more dominoes to fall to where I can kind of get a better idea, better gauge of what he's trying to shape this team towards.
I mean, follow up to that in terms of, I've heard the comment, Ryan McDonough's vision is clear. Ryan McDonough knows what he wants to do. Jim mentions there's probably going to be more trade activity. In my gut, it feels like there's got to be at least one more move to kind of tie together everything. It feels like this team is very, very heavy at the four and very light on the shooting and the two guard traditionally. When you look at this, what is Ryan McDonough's vision with this team? Is it still a work in progress in terms of this summer? What is the vision? What is the mold? What is he trying to do, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's, you know, first of all, I agree. There's another shoe that has to fall. I got to believe we are even benefit of the doubt that, you know, this is far from a completed project. But again, I look at, you know, the two major assets that he's acquired. Top five pick and the, you know, hottest trade asset on the market, and they're two things that don't go together that well. At least in my opinion, they may dissent on that and say no. They think that Len can definitely run and play in enough tempo style, but you know, I personally don't see it that way. So it is tough to kind of gauge, but if there is a vision, there's some conflict there in that vision. I mean, we can all say that. If there is a vision, Bledsoe and Len, it's very hard to imagine them being part of the same vision.
Now, we're looking at this right now. I just kind of want to, live on Tuesday, but you're listening on Wednesday. I get that. But July the 2nd, here in Arizona, or technically July the 3rd at like 1 a.m. if you're on the East Coast, which if you're a Suns fan on the East Coast, good for you. You're a trooper. But right now, Chad Ford of ESPN, one of your colleagues, is legitimately tweeting about how he's hearing that numerous teams, and by numerous, I'm pretty sure he means about half the league, are going to be tanking for the 2014 draft. Lots of teams are very, very excited for the 2014 draft, listed the Phoenix Suns as, in his opinion, probably one of the five worst teams in the NBA next season. Is that, when you look at the long-term picture for this team, is the next shoe to fall the 2014 draft? I mean, maybe you put on a snow mitten and some swim trunks and then try and go run out there in the rain, so that way, you know, you can continue to be the team that you were this past season, and maybe eventually when you run out in the rain, you eventually find that missing piece and the outfit all comes together. Does that make sense? I mean, is this maybe they go in like the band of misfit toys into next season to be able to be bad for the 2014 draft? No one will ever admit that within the front office, but that's got to be at least in the back of the mind or in the front of the mind right there, right, Amin?
I mean, there's not a question. Before the draft, before any of these trades, you know, before even Ryan McDonough was hired, you're a fool if you looked at that Suns roster and thought, oh, you know, we're just one move away from being in the playoffs. It's a poor team. They were going to be a top five drafting team next year, almost regardless of what anyone did. But again, you know, my whole thing about tanking, this culture of we're going to be bad on purpose in order to get a favorable draft choice next year. So you're not tanking for Wiggins, because that's just dumb, saying I'm going to tank for one pick and one pick alone. But you're tanking for the opportunity to get any number of these guys who land in the draft next year that we project, like Julius Randle and Wiggins and the Harrison twins and et cetera. So, you know, the notion that I reject is to purposefully try to be bad. You know, for many of these teams, they don't have to try to be bad on purpose. The Suns don't have to try to be bad on purpose. It's going to happen. So really what they should be focused on is building a culture that you want to carry forward. So, you know, everyone points to Oklahoma City. Oh, that's the blueprint. What if, you know, just tank willy-nilly? They started with, you know, moving, Ray Allen for a top five pick. And then, you get Jeff Green and Kevin Durant. These are guys with great work ethic. The type of guys that, you know, I always talk about, you know, the three types of players in the NBA. They're the guys that they're awful no matter what you do as far as personality-wise, work ethic-wise, et cetera. They're the type of guys that are you know, great no matter where you where they are or who's around them. You know, so either your Grant Hills and your LeBron James and your people like that. And then the vast majority, the middle majority, is these people who will follow whatever direction the rest of the crowd is going. So if the locker room is a locker room of dirt balls, for lack of a better term, they will be dirt ball. If you put them into, you know, great character locker room, work ethic and all that stuff, they're going to follow that as well. So having said that, when you're building your team and you are tanking, you are effectively teaching the culture of, hey, let's be bad. Let's do the wrong thing. Let's reward poor behavior. Let's not reward people who are doing the right thing, which is kind of what the Suns did last year. And what that does is it creates a rotten culture. And, you know, even if you do get your Godson next year, he's not going to fix anything unless he's just a completely transcendent talent. And more often than not, we see that these kids aren't. They're good players, even great players, but those truly transcendent, like, no matter what is in that locker room, I will lift the quality of play. Those guys are few and far between.
And Jim, I'll let you kind of close us out here. There's a difference between purposely losing and positioning yourself with young talent that may not be ready to win, but that way, as Amin said, you're laying down a foundation, you're creating a culture. I think with what the Suns are doing, you move a guy like Jared Dudley, we can all imagine that there's probably going to be more moves down the road. Marcin Gortat's been rumored. There's a big difference between losing games on purpose, you know, going out there and scoring less points than the other team so that way you lose, and doing what it looks like the Suns are doing, acquiring young assets that can play and develop for a couple of years, and a form of that function is being a bad team and collecting top five picks. Do you feel that's kind of what the Suns are doing at this point, is being a form of the function? They're going to lose to get top five picks, but it's because they're developing young talent.
I agree with that approach. There's different things that play into it, though. Like, let's look at a couple things the Suns had. From being around the team all year, like you were, Chris, I think that we can both agree on the fact that that was a bad locker room last year, that there was a lot of the veterans that were in there were frustrated, upset. You could see where lots of people on the team checked out for stretches. And I think, to me, it really looked like they could use some Prozac in the Gatorade. Is that something that you pretty much agree with, Chris?
Yeah, it felt like a very segregated locker room. There was cliques, and there was, you know, times where some games everybody was together, but after most games it was basically get dressed and get out as fast as possible.
So if McDonough is bringing in his guys, the guys that he likes, the guys that he thinks are going to be hard workers that aren't going to quit if the team struggles and doesn't obviously compete because they're not going to, but they're trying to improve their game, these types of things. And even with his future moves, and what I'd really like to see him do with his future moves with moving Gortat and Skolick, because I'd like them moved, is to come back a little bit, because they went right up to the cap with the Dudley trade absorbing some of that extra salary. So I'd like to see if they could get back and have some flexibility going into the trade deadline and the draft next year, because that's always helpful. But
yeah.
I don't care if he duplicates positions. And, you know, if he wants to have five point guards and five centers on this team, as long as they're all talents and he thinks he can split them at a later date, then he can do that. We can play five, we can play six point guards, and then he can go into the draft next year and draft Marcus Smart, and we'll have seven point guards. And as long as he can move all those pieces around, because if you have good assets, you can always move those good assets and flip them for different assets. You can do the Daryl Morey type of thing and just shuffle all the, play a shell game and shuffle around the shells, and nobody knows where the prize, which one that is, where the coin is, you know, those types of games. And you can obviously be really successful with that. So rather than try to make moves that say, hey, instead of winning 20 games next year, let's try to improve by 5 games and win 30 games next year, and that way we can pick 8th or 9th instead of in the top five, that doesn't make sense. Sometimes you got to take a step back to take 2 forward. Sometimes you got to suffer some growing pains and look at the bigger picture. And sometimes you have to lose to win. Sometimes when you lose, you really win.
Yeah, and you know what, with that being considered, there's a lot of things that this team can do to get better, and sometimes you get better by taking a step back and kind of stripping things down and let it kind of come together organically. And with the way that locker room was last year, I would imagine it'll be a little bit better this year. Here's the thing with the Eric Bledsoe trade. My only take on this is that there's got to be something that the Suns front office is doing right when the past 2 years, the names attached to Eric Bledsoe were Dwight Howard and Kevin Garnett. I think we can all agree that Jared Dudley, as much as we love him, he's a great role player. I think he plays his role on a good team very, very, very well. But he's not Kevin Garnett, and he's not Dwight Howard, even at the stages of their career. So the fact that they were able to turn a second-round pick, eat Caron Butler's contract, and just trade Jared Dudley to be able to acquire Eric Bledsoe and now be able to use him as they please, I think that says a lot about this front office. And what says a lot about this group here is I think very early on in this this triple threat, three-on-one handicap match, I got knocked out early, and the referee is raising both of your guys' hands. I'm going to go ahead and rule this a unanimous decision. You guys win the Iron Man match, and you guys, as they do on PTI, I'm going to give Amin, you got 30 seconds to say goodbye and say where everyone can find you. And then, Jim, I want you to close us out with where people can find you, because I think you're actually on Twitter now.
All right. Well, as you guys know, at Amin ESPN, that is at A-M-I-N ESPN on Twitter. I like to be pretty engaging with the fans. I answer questions. I crack jokes. I do pop culture references. I'm incredible. And then for my pieces, you can go to ESPN.com and enter my name, Amin Al-Hassan, under the search bar. Actually, if you just type Amin, my face usually comes up as one of the top few faces there. So that's where you can find my piece.
I would say next time we go with this, Chris, if you focus more on moderation and less on giving your opinion, then you could probably move past me at least. You'll have a harder time catching Amin in terms of winning the three-on-one battle there. But, yeah, I have just kind of dipped my toes into the Twitter pool. And so you can follow me there at Jim_Kokenauer. And if you don't know how to spell that, just go on Bright Side of the Sun and you can look it up there. And, yeah, obviously you can follow all the podcasts there. And one of these days, Chris and I are going to get these on TuneIn or iTunes or some kind of format like that. So people can start subscribing to them, something like that, so you can get alerted instead of having to look it up every Wednesday morning.
You know what? And no matter what tune this podcast is singing, I think we're all under the consensus opinion. I am unfortunately the Dennis Miller of this booth that we have here. We appreciate the listens, folks. We'll be back next week. We're not going to take any breaks off. Summer League is starting soon, so definitely keep your eye on Bright Side of the Sun for all the breaking news as well as the podcast each week. Have a good rest of your day, and we'll talk to you guys next week.